Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel for this Monday, the 10th of December. Very nice to have you with us. It's a thrill that you're all here on this Monday. Hopefully you had a lovely, lovely weekend and lots was accomplished or not, depending on how you wish to spend it. It's up to you, really. Hey, we have a ton of things to talk about. There was we had news on Cohen, we had news on Manafort, we had news on Mueller, we had news on the Saudis, we had news on Wall Street, we had news on John Kelly. And that was just Friday.
Too much.
That was Friday.
That was afternoon on Friday.
Right. And here you go. So we have a lot to talk about.
And we have the kosher police to talk about.
Yeah, we have the kosher police to talk about.
I'm more than happy to do that.
We have normally, just for listeners at home, normally I sort of look through and we'll find a couple of stories that I think will be conversation starters. I throw them out to the group and say, here, you know, here's some things. So we're all on a level playing field and here's some stories. We don't stick to them always, but, you know, just some general things. And normally I come up with four or five, and last night I came up with like 15.
You did.
So,
you came up with a lot.
I was scratching the surface.
So we'll try as much as possible to get to all of this good stuff. We also have a wonderful panel. It's a big panel, so we have a lot of voices on a lot of topics. So let's get started. To my immediate left.
Of course.
You're in the right place. Political consultant Libby Post is with us. Good morning, Libby. How
good morning.
Are you?
I'm nice good. I got up at 5 in order to read all those articles.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I got a little late last night, so I apologize, but thank you. Executive editor of the Times Herald Record, Barry Lewis, made his way up the thruway. Good morning, sir. How
good
are
morning,
you?
Good morning, Joe. I got up at 5 just to get here.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate you making the trek. It's very nice of you to do so. Sarah Rogerson is with us. She's an Albany Law School professor who directs the Immigration Law Clinic. Good morning, Sarah. How
Good
are you?
Morning. I'm great. I was asleep at 5.
Yes, very nice. So you're fresh as anything right now. That's good. We're thrilled to have James Ketterer back with us. He's Dean of International Studies at Bard College and Academic Director of the Bard Globalization and International Affairs Program. Jim, good morning.
Good morning. Nice to be here. And once again, great music that brought us into this program.
Absolutely.
Always do a fantastic job.
John Mayall's Blues Breakers. So, and we always have that playlist on our website, wamc.org/roundtable. Hey, also, WAMC's Alan Shartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are
you?
Hey,
and I'm here and I'm in good voice.
Yeah, you sound much better. You sound much better. Alan was a little, your voice is a little on the shaggy side.
I had a frog in my throat.
Yeah.
But, you know, I opened up my mouth, the frog jumped out, and then all was well.
All was well. We ask, especially since we have a lot to talk about and we have a lot of different voices this morning, we ask that you keep your letter short, to the point, on topic, and, you know, just remember that it's hard to correctly guess the tone when reading an email, so...
Don't be sarcastic.
Sarcasm sometimes doesn't work. It doesn't translate well. Sometimes it doesn't translate with us here, but even more so.
And we want to encourage, we want to encourage all those people who don't usually write to write us a letter.
That's right. If you you know, some people say you didn't read my letter, and I'll say, oh, I'm sorry, and I said I thought we did, and she said, no, you read the. Either the second and third one, you didn't read the first, fifth, and sixth one as well, you know.
Get a grip.
We try. Okay. So
one
to a customer, exactly. All right. Let's get started and talk about what's going on. We begin with Russians interacted with at least 14 Trump associates during the campaign and the transition. There's this flurry of activities. Federal prosecutors filed new court papers on December 7th, that would be Friday, that revealed a previously unreported contact from a Russian to Trump's inner circle during the campaign. The Russian ambassador, a deputy prime minister, a pop star, a weightlifter, a lawyer, a Soviet Army veteran with alleged intelligence ties. Again and again over the course of Donald Trump's 18-month campaign for presidency, Russian citizens made contact with his closest family members and friends, as well as figures on the periphery of his orbit. This from the Washington Post. Some offered to help his campaign and his real estate business. Some offered dirt on his Democratic opponent. Repeatedly, Russian nationals suggested Trump should hold a peacekeeping sit-down with Vladimir Putin and offered to broker such a summit. In all, Russians interacted with at least 14 Trump associates during the campaign and presidential transition, public records and interviews show. As Robert Mueller slowly unveils the evidence that he has gathered since his appointment as special counsel in May of 2017, he has not yet shown that any of the dozens of interaction between people in Trump's orbit and Russians resulted in any specific coordination between his presidential campaign and Russia. But the mounting number of communications that have been revealed occurred against the backdrop of sustained efforts by the Russian government to interfere with the U.S. presidential election, that is a quote, as Mueller's prosecutors wrote in a court filing last week. The special counsel's filings have also revealed moments when Russia appeared to be taking cues from Trump. In July 2016, the then candidate said at a news conference, Russia, if you're listening, I hope you'll be able to find 30,000 emails that are missing. And later, apparently, that was worked on.
Lo and behold.
Lo and behold. Somebody spoke and somebody listened. So there you go.
You know what, Joe? The amazing thing is we wouldn't be talking about this if Hillary had spent as much time talking to people in Michigan as Trump did and his associates talking to people in Russia. You know, none of this would even have been taking place. It is amazing. It's hard to find anyone in that administration that, or previous or current, certainly in that inner circle, who did not talk to some level of Russian government, oligarchy, or various, you know, various business officials as well.
But I think that it's important to keep in mind in terms we have a lawyer here, so you can correct me. But I think that when people were not in the administration, they were working for the campaign, or even before there was a campaign, and as private citizens, they were in contact with Russians and Russian government officials, I think that's a violation of the Logan Act, which prohibits private individuals from negotiating with foreign powers.
And because he didn't have a lot of seasoned professionals, politicians, working for them, either through ignorance or possibly knowing and just not thinking that the president would win, continue to hold these levels of communication. You know, when you talk to people in a Bush administration or even the Clinton administration, Obama administration, they all said they were surprised just how much communication had taken place. And at some point, all of them knew that they had to divest, they had to separate, and this never took place with this administration.
But Barry, the thing is that you had people who were seasoned political professionals doing this. You had Paul Manafort, you had Carter Page, you had Jeff Sessions, Michael Flynn, Roger Stone. They know.
Well, they were seasoned, but they also had a dark past.
Yes, they know. They know. I mean, this is the perfect example of if it walks like a duck and it squawks like a duck, it probably is a duck. And, you know, I find it very hard to believe that this isn't going to go all the way up to the top.
And for someone like Manafort, you know, I think that the narrative has generally been, well, you know, he was also in on this. He was also talking to the Russians. I wouldn't be surprised if Manafort was picked as the campaign chairman because he already had deep ties to the Russians,
and he was
via his work in Ukraine.
Right.
And he had been doing that for many years.
And he didn't disclose it.
And he was in very deep there.
And we don't know how deep the president was in because we've never seen his tax returns, so we don't know. We know that his son had been involved in trying to do some—
You saw the story on that this morning—
building.
In which Trump now says that his son effed up. Did you see that?
No.
I mean, it's a major story that the son really screwed up this time, and that's from Trump to one of the 10,000 people who Trump has fired who will now
write a book.
Write a book or scream. I think this was in a book, Libby. That's coming out. I do want to say that the one thing that I think everybody who's out there is thinking this morning is that there's a good deal of thought, and I'd love to hear from Sarah on this, that this president may in fact be indicted while he's in office, and he as the old country song goes, he'll be in the jailhouse now. With all this talk about Hillary should go to jail, talk about projection, the psychological mechanism of projection, this guy is really, so what we have, Justice Department says, well, no, we don't think you can do a sitting president. Wait,
wait just a second. You can't indict a sitting president? Let's take it to the absurd. What if the sitting president pulls out a gun in broad daylight and kills somebody? Which he said, by the way, he could do on Fifth Avenue. Big joke. So I think the big story coming out of all of this is that Trump is being accused of being a felonious crook, although that's double. And although that's double, that's a story.
Well,
boy,
not just Trump, but Pence as well is implicated
right.
at this
mm-hmm.
point.
It is stunning. I mean, I didn't think we could get to a point where I could still gasp, but I have to say you have federal prosecutors in New York saying that Cohen should receive 42 months, a substantial prison sentence for his involvement. Then Mueller's office files its own court documents saying that Cohen lied to investigators to protect Trump. And then the president at 6 o'clock on Friday night tweets, totally clears the president. Thank you.
And
oh,
my
God.
It all comes down to intent. For that particular sure. violation, sure. we have to separate them now in buckets of felonies and misdemeanors, high
That's
crimes
right.
and misdemeanors. So this bucket of felonies has to do with campaign finance. And I think that's the one that most people are talking about now, because that's the one that we know the most about that could stick. Potentially.
I don't know Ken, Sarah, if you think about it, he's going to say, he's already said, oh no, I had none of that in mind. It wasn't to affect the campaign, it was to protect my family.
Yeah, we need to find, what is it, a smocking gun in the form of an email from the president, from the then candidate to Cohen, directing him to do something.
And we may still have that. We don't even know.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
Mueller
no,
is so far ahead of what is being reported, and how, you know, the integrity of this man and his investigation, nearly 2 years, and, you know, no peeps from him, no leaks from the office unless something, you know, they, sure. Wants to be sent out. And he might already have that smoking gun. He's looked at the tax returns. He knows what's there. And he, as any, you know, as a litigator would tell us, is building the case slowly and, you know, pyramid.
And it's interesting to see the difference between how Mueller and his team are talking about Cohen and what should happen to Cohen and the Southern District of New York.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I wanted to follow up on that, Jim. That's a very good point. This competition between Mueller and the Southern District seems to be huge. Now, remember that Trump sat down and chose the chief...
new Preet Bharara for the Southern
that's
District.
That's right. He sat
that's
there and he interviewed that person. But the name that keeps coming up is not this guy Berman. It's somebody else's name. So I don't exactly know what's happening there in the Southern District. But they were taking no prisoners with Cohen, right?
May not be a competition. It could be coordination.
Right.
They
could
said
be.
That they may
yeah,
be able to overlap,
be.
That Mueller would be able to, would not push so that whatever sentencing went in for Cohen, the two would there be some sort of agreement?
Yeah, he gave him a break on that 1 year.
There's a little bit of form shopping happening too, because we have pretty favorable judges in the Southern District in terms of being tough on these types of white collar crimes. So it'll be really interesting to see how it plays out too with Pence. So we've had whispers of Pence, whispers, just the faintest, and that was enough to send me down the constitutional rabbit hole. And luckily, I work I have colleagues who are constitutional law scholars, and I did not know this, but if the vice president has to resign, apparently it's the House majority that has veto power over the replacement of the vice president. How interesting is that? Nancy Pelosi, the most reviled.
We could end up with President Pelosi
we could.
In the long run.
Actually, Alexander Haig automatically becomes a net. I think
he's declared it. Yes.
Dig him up.
We have, in fact, gone through this. Remember,
right. yeah.
remember that Agnew had to get out because he stole while he was nolo contendere. However, while he was
the governor of Maryland.
No,
right?
He wasn't the governor. I think he was a county exec. I may be
really?
wrong.
Really that bad?
Just more powerful. Wow. He was the county commissioner.
They got him for something way before goodbye, and then that's how we got Gerald Ford, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, meanwhile, in the 2 minutes before we have to go to a break, while all of this is going on, and this is to Alan's point, that if accusations that President Donald Trump directed his former lawyer, Michael Cohen, to make illegal hush payments to women who had alleged affairs with Trump proved to be true, New York Democrat Representative Jerry Nadler said yesterday on all the news shows, I think he was on all of them, at least two of them simultaneously, that those actions would be impeachable offenses.
And that's interesting because he's been reluctant to go down the impeachment path.
And he is the incoming chairman of the House Judiciary Committee.
They didn't talk impeachment before the election. Now they can because they're safe.
If there is an ambitious politician in the United States of America, it's Jerry Nadler.
But he's good.
And I have watched him.
He's great.
I have watched him from day one when I was his, I was his contemporary rather than his constituent. And I watched how he took over every political club on the west side of Manhattan with a group called the Kids. And they would go in and they would vote out the existing people. And that's how they got there. Jerry Nadler, as Alice Chandler, the past president of New Paltz once said of me, we need to keep an eye on him.
Well, he was very effective in the assembly, and then he went to Congress.
But, you know, there's all this talk about the Democrats, what they have to do and how their constituency is going to expect one thing and how they have to be politically maneuver another way. But, you know, in many ways, they just have to follow what Mueller, what the investigation does. You know, and so they can you know, they're going to hold hearings. But by just sitting back and letting the law take its course, they don't have to show their hand. They shouldn't.
Barry, one last thing, and I know we got to go to a break, but I have to tell you, I think it's a mistake to impeach this guy too early.
Yes.
The reason that the House of Representatives is so blue right now is because of Donald Trump.
And Nadler made that point. He said you don't necessarily launch an impeachment against the president because he committed an impeachable offense. There are several things you have to look at.
Yeah, that's one of those several things. Is
and they wouldn't be able to. They don't have enough votes in the Senate.
The future of your Democratic Party.
And to take the Senate in 2020.
That's right.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll have letters. We'll have much more to discuss, a ton of topics, and we welcome you to join us, panel, at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We have Sarah Rogerson, Libby Post, Jim Ketterher, and Barry Lewis. Alan Chartok has letters. We'll go there first, and then we'll talk about other stuff.
I'll read them, but I don't always understand them. For example, Agnew's Crimes. The podcast Bag Man by Rachel Maddow goes into Agnew's story at great length. Agnew was not only taking bribes as county executive, but also as governor of Maryland. Everybody was right, governor of Maryland, and even the White House. And that's from Elizabeth.
And that podcast is amazing if you have not heard it. It is really quite incredible.
Shall I continue?
Yes, please.
Well, thank you, Joe.
There's more.
There is. Fred says, Pence, repeated lies told to him. Did he know? Somebody else?
He knew.
Do we need an interpreter? Well, you got to. It's not that he didn't. He knew, Libby. It's that you got to prove he knew.
I know.
Yeah, that's always the tricky part.
And he wasn't. He wasn't in. He's not exactly. You know, early. He was never like in Trump's inner circle. He's not family.
Yeah, but you know what's interesting here, Barry, is the fact that he got that he got the other guy fired, right?
Flynn, because Flynn lied to him.
Because he lied to him about that subject. So that sort of gave him a kind of political insulation, didn't it?
Yeah, and it's interesting that they didn't say, well, the reason we're firing Flynn is that he did these actions. It's that, well, that he lied about them to the vice president, not that he did them.
Well, right. Sometimes it's the lies that are a greater crime than the actual
crime.
Well,
serious
it may
crime.
Prove that the vice president is one smart cookie. That's what it may prove, that he was so angry about having to enter into this illicit group that he said it's me or him. I think that's a possibility.
Well, he has to pitch himself as the choir boy. Yeah. I mean, if this
he wouldn't
whole
go
house
in a room with you, Sarah.
I wouldn't go in a room with Pence alone.
He wouldn't go in a room with me either. He would think the whole world would open up and hell
and
would
swallow him up.
Swallow him up.
But we would pay to see that. Probably.
Yeah, I know. Me too.
So he, you know, I think he's an opportunist, and he saw an opportunity in Donald Trump, and he vied for this vice presidency not because he believes in this president, but because he believes in himself and his opportunities when everything falls apart.
That would never happen in politics.
And I think we saw that with
never
you know, with the evangelicals. It's not as if they believe in Trump, because Trump doesn't have any belief in anything other than money and family, but they saw this as an ends to a means, means to an ends. You know, we'll get the judges, we'll get somebody who will, you know, push back against Roe v. Wade, and we'll hold our nose.
And who will send? I mean, you know, one of the stories we're talking about today, hopefully, is the fact that the administration has now stopped funding HIV research. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is Mike Pence. It's Mike Pence written all over it. He hates the gay community. He went, you know, the Indiana has one of the highest rates of HIV because of the way he dealt with prevention in his state. He would love to see us all die. And I'm not, this is not hyperbole, folks. He would love to see all of us die, go away, go on an island. He thinks we are an abomination.
Well, you don't really know that, Libby.
Oh, I do know that.
That's a little far.
No, Alan. I know that. I know that.
Well,
in my soul.
Well, in your soul may be different from, you know, with the public awareness.
All you need to do is look at his record.
Or in your lived experience. It's a record of extermination.
Right. All you need to do is look at his record.
Can we talk about that a minute? What was record of extermination here?
I think it's important to listen to the voices of the people who are impacted by the policies. That's all. I'm amplifying what Libby's saying because it's her lived experience. So, you know, we might see that as, you know, a series of bills or actions that have clamped down on HIV research. But, you know, for
it's people's lives. It's like when everybody said George H.W. Bush was such a great guy. And on some levels, he was a nice person. But he let hundreds of tens and thousands and over 100,000 gay men die because he wouldn't do anything about AIDS during his tenure and the 8 years before when he was vice president. So, you know, and Mike Pence comes right out of that playbook.
And when you talk about bodily autonomy, I had never felt insecure about my bodily autonomy until right after this election.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because I'm white and I don't usually have to worry about those types of things. But being a woman, after all that happened, you know, these things are felt. They're not just, you know, black and white text on pieces of paper that we wring our hands about and tweet about. They're things that we have to live with every day.
Reading on, Jamie says, can we stop using the term treason, just for my own edification? Anybody use the word treason here today?
We did not.
No, we didn't. But it's. Yeah. But I think it raises an interesting thing. I think we also didn't talk about the word collusion. But I think, you know, the cases that are being brought and the charges that are being made are all about campaign finance issues, perjury, et cetera. I mean, collusion is not a crime. It's problematic, as I said, with the Logan Act, and is politically problematic, perhaps. But conspiracy is a crime, and I think that's a very high bar.
Mm. And collusion was so 2017.
Yeah, now we have political synergy.
Yes, right.
And is Mueller not a genius to use those words, political synergy?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I will give him for credit for not. I mean, that is not the kind of word you just throw out there. And he used it several times. He didn't need to use the words collusion, but he used a word to sort of help describe that connection between Trump or individual number one and Russia.
And because he didn't use collusion, the president thinks he's totally clear.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Somebody's going to have to sit him down.
So I wanted to continue with Jamie's letter, who says, treason, can we stop using the term treason? We didn't hear. Treason can only occur when somebody aids an enemy of the United States. An enemy of the United States is a nation upon whom the United States Congress has declared war. No war, no treason. Talk about a red herring. Setting up a red herring. We never talked about treason, and I have no idea what this is all about. Even if the Saud Empire is really an enemy of us, conspiring with them may be many crimes, but treason is not one of them, comma, yet. Okay, but thanks for bringing up something we didn't bring up.
This letter mentions the Saudis?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that also is cooking along as an issue with Mueller. This whole, the connections between Jared Kushner, Mohammed bin Salman, various other actors, this guy George Nader, who has been reeled in by Mueller earlier, that it's not getting the same amount of attention. But in the end, I think those connections could be even closer. It could be more of a quid pro quo and could be more serious, I think, in terms of actual crimes.
And, Jim, one of the things that was raised on one of the morning shows, I forget which this morning, there was an allusion to Jared Kushner as the other crown prince, which is pretty funny because apparently he's been spending a lot of time counseling the crown prince.
And Alan, people have talked about how the crown prince had found him to be the perfect foil, and his lack of just political experience in terms of dealing with other countries and ambassadorships, and just not being prepared, and how they saw that as Putin saw with Trump. Mm-hmm.
Useful.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then we have the Department of Defense. That story can't be buried either. The Department of Defense now saying that they have been fueling Saudi-backed government forces in Yemen, which has resulted in a massive humanitarian crisis. The brunt of which has been borne by children.
Yeah. Well, I think to be fair, this also took place under the previous administration.
Sure.
And this is a longer standing problem. I do have to say one thing that is interesting to me, just on this note, and has a local angle, that my local assembly member, Pat Fahey, taken up this issue, and she's paying attention. I think it's appropriate for elected members at all these levels to be looking at these sorts of issues, especially since there's a substantial Yemeni community here in her district. And, you know, as I've said before in this program, I just don't think enough elected members are really paying attention to this stuff.
Reading on, Matthew writes, Hillary, thank you so much for bringing up the fact that Hillary blew it in Michigan and elsewhere by resting on her unearned laurels. Yet, yes, Comey had a hand in ruining this election, but the fact that a proven buffoon was within 5 points of her at all points to a failed Hillary Clinton campaign.
Let's not forget that she won the popular vote.
Yes, but that doesn't.
I know.
That doesn't. I mean, you can take solace in that, but she ran a horrible campaign.
I think.
And I don't know. I mean, there's no apology for she. Just, you know, she didn't listen to people. She didn't run the campaign that she should have run. Comey certainly did not help 2 weeks before the election by any stretch, but she did not help herself.
Lots of men have won elections on crappy campaigns. And we don't.
This isn't a man-woman thing.
Yes,
I'm not saying.
It's total misogyny.
No. I am not saying Hillary Clinton, if a man handled the campaign like she did,
he would be the worst campaigner as well.
Look, she was, without question, had the best credentials of anyone, but that doesn't guarantee you the election. And, you know, her husband, and I'm not saying this because he's a man, but it happens to be her husband. I'm sorry, but Bill Clinton was maybe the world's greatest campaigner and knew how to do it. And Obama knows how to do it. And I know that there are women who know how to do it. She just doesn't happen to be someone who knows how to do it. And she didn't do it well, and maybe she didn't listen to her
advisors. And I also don't think the Russians thought that she would lose. I think they were trying to create chaos in the American system, but I don't think that they thought that Donald Trump was going to win.
I don't think Donald Trump thought Donald Trump was going to win, and he was going to walk away with these lucrative money deals, bags and bags of money. Hillary would be present. He'd shrug his shoulders and say, oh, well, less work for me.
I mean, in 2018, we saw a lot of great women win across the country. So this isn't about who ran successful campaigns. So this isn't about picking on a woman. I think it would be wrong for us to ignore what she didn't do because she's a woman.
Okay,
that would be wrong.
Let's just be clear about a couple of things. Yes, she was the candidate, and ultimately the buck stops with her. But there was a man running the campaign, a guy named Robbie Mook, who was using modeling to win, which is not the best thing. Yes, Bill said you need to go to Wisconsin, you need to go to Michigan, and they didn't listen to him. But there was also a great deal of misogyny, even from women, who didn't want a woman president. And we can't discount that as well. Now, 2018, there was a sea change because of Trump. And so I call him the gift that keeps on giving, because look what he gave us. He gave us a blue House of Representatives, you know, and in 2020, we may have a blue Senate. And and probably a blue president. But yes, it wasn't the best run campaign, but I think that there were more factors in it, not just, oh, she was a lousy candidate.
So, Libby, are you saying, I just want to make sure.
Yeah, we have to go to a break. Go ahead.
Okay. Are you saying, we could talk about it afterwards, that we may, in the long run, when the historians are all done with this, be lucky that Trump won, because in the end we're going to reevaluate our values in this country, and that may be interesting.
We'll reevaluate our values in on the short term, as we usually do, and then we go back to what you always say: it's whether or not the middle class votes up or down in terms of helping people up or helping themselves up.
I do say that.
Long term, by the way, we're going to be having federal judges long past still on this earth, and that's the scary part.
Yeah, that's true, Barry.
If we're reevaluating, just hurry up. we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have more letters. We have more topics. We have a lot to discuss. We'll be right back after the short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. 10 minutes before 10 o'clock, we have Alan Chartok, Jim Ketterer, Sarah Rogerson, Barry Lewis, and Libby Post. Alan has more letters, and we go.
Here we go. Kevin says, Trump, this is Kevin from Melrose, smoking gun, we already had a tape of Cohen telling Trump about payments to the Inquirer. Trump has gaslit half the nation, and I feel that any other candidate or president would already have been toast. Could you imagine Hillary on tape saying these things? She would have already been impeached. The Democrats will be too nice and mess this up. Remember, there was no political backlash for the stolen SCOTUS seat. Impeach. Well, as you know, I don't agree with that. I think Trump in the White House right now is the best thing that could continue for the Democrats. Mike says, Vice President replacement correction. Hi, someone on the panel said that the House of Representatives gets to vote on anyone nominated for vice president. Half right, according to the 25th Amendment. Both the House and the Senate must confirm anyone nominated by the president to be vice president. And it must be my majority vote of the House and Senate by, but that's what you were talking about, Joe, by majority vote of the House and Senate. So no Nancy Pelosi as VP as long as the GOP controls the Senate. Not exactly.
Yeah, the House has veto power, which is what I think I said.
So. No, I think, Sarah, we have to get our stuff together here, but I think it is a collective vote.
It's the whole body.
The whole body between the Senate and the House, and that's why the House has the the majority. It has the whip hand here. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
It's a more precise statement.
Well, it's a very important distinction.
Yeah.
It's one of the only times they sit together for the purpose of doing an action.
Right.
Okay.
But we end up with Vice President Pelosi not because of that, not the vote, but because of the succession, right? The line of succession.
Yes, that's right.
We
but
end
guess
up
what?
With President.
President Pelosi. Exactly.
Yes. Because of succession.
But guess what? It ain't going to be Nancy Pelosi. They'll do what they did with Ford. They'll find an acceptable Republican moderate.
Who I'm sure there are
what happens if they both go, though?
What'd you say?
If both Trump and Pence.
Then Pelosi's the president.
That's right. That's what I'm looking at.
But if Trump goes and Pence can't be
No, but you're saying if they both go because
at the same
something
time.
Terrible happens and they're both in the same room at the same time. And
they both have to resign because of high crimes and misdemeanors.
Well, you'll have the situation you had with Nixon. What'll happen then is then Nixon will appoint a vice president. The vice president will appoint, the next vice president because he's now president. So
because they wouldn't both go at the exact
they would not
same
go
time.
At,
right.
The only way they go at the same time is if something really bad happens.
Mueller.
Both are missing. Yeah.
I think that Ivanka then becomes the president. I don't know if that's the next succession or Eric, one of the two.
Yeah.
Trump.
Eric. Yeah.
But bottom line, in regards to all Trump and associates' criminal activities, the FBI, the CIA, the IRS, New York State, and God only knows how many other institutions failed the American people repeatedly, one can't help but wonder what else they missed and are missing, and that's from Joe. All right. And Roger says, impeachment. I have written both senators urging them to convince their Republican counterparts privately to vote Trump out when articles of impeachment are passed in the House. Oh, that'll do it, Roger. You tell him to do that. It is far beyond policy issues, but his incompetence, emolument clauses, and his taxes, among other things, Trump's impulsive chest pounding and correcting tweets are dangerous. quote, I'm a tariff man. With the current trade war with China and the stock market drops 3%, Trump does not have a clue on how influential and dangerous these tweets are. Republican senators put the country above party for once. And incidentally, this is a very good reason to keep Pelosi on as speaker. And by the way, there are some indications in the papers this morning that she may not have the votes to do it, that there are 16. And if those 16 continue to say no Pelosi, that they'll have to find somebody else. Peter says, Pence signed the most vicious anti-gay law in the United States and later had to back off under pressure from business leaders. Peter, are you going to say something about that?
No, he did. It was horrible. You know, he wanted to institutionalize discrimination, and the business community said no. And you know, it's weird to me that it's corporate America that is the ones who are standing up for the LGBT community.
Did they get a contract?
I know. Well, you know they want good workers, and that it's the creative community actually that's going to help us get back to our value and moral center.
What's the creative? I'm sorry.
Like, you know, if you look at the advertising that's on TV right now, have incredible amounts of multicultural families.
Oh, yeah.
You even have black men with white women, which is the taboo. Okay? But you see that in commercials, and you're seeing it. Now, we see it here. I don't know what they're showing in the Midwest.
People say, well, there's no problem because everything that's coming through the television set says multiculturalism. We're embracing this.
Right. So it's an interesting thing that, you know, these are the things that are going to save us. And then Robert Mueller, the former FBI director, is going to save us. And who would have ever thought that would happen?
And John writes, Libby is right. Libby isn't just talking about what she believes. We LGBT people have been listening to what the Pences of this country have been saying in every election. They've been saying, we're going to eliminate you guys. For decades. And then we heard on a different subject from Tim. And in more news, adding to Joe's litany of news stories over the weekend, there's also the news that four countries at the Poland Climate Conference chose not to welcome the October United Nations report from the IPCC. Guess which four? Rejecting the notion that the IPCC advises phasing our fossil fuels. It says phasing, but it must be phasing out our fossil fuels by 2050. Yep, U.S., Russia, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait. Yeah. Why do politics trump science? What can be done to help people understand that science-based information is the only rational way to anticipate our future? Keep up the good work, but keep the conversation about the urgency of transitioning to renewable energy and creating tons of new jobs in the bargain. And that's from Tim, PhD, in Saratoga Springs.
All right, see if we can get those three in before the break, and we'll...
I'll try, Joe.
We'll take a break.
I'll do my best. Kathy says, just curious, dear panel, if perhaps someday Trump, in fact, ends up in prison with a Secret Service detail.
Yes, that word. That's interesting.
That for life, and I wanted to do the. Do they stay with him?
That always accompanies a former president. Have to go with him, and that's Kathy in North
Thank
Bennington.
You for the laugh, Kathy.
That's pretty funny. Chris says, 2020. Don't count on a blue Senate or presidency. A lot can happen in 2 years. Well,
that's for sure. Yeah,
that's always true. Yeah. We've learned that the hard way. Joel says, historians, good morning. It doesn't matter how historians will look back on the 2016 election because there will be no history. Mother Nature is seeing to that. That's Joel from Blooming Grove, New York. And then finally, Reed says.
Yeah, Joel, I guess.
It's a different version of the end of history.
So when I do that.
He's right. 12 years, I think, is what we've got before the.
Yeah.
So when I do that long-term Home Depot thing, I should be able to extend it out and don't worry about that interest-free. And
you got to worry about everything.
And as Mario used to say, and treason. In response to one of the last letters, I pointed out the fact that the Russian government has been heavily involved in the conflict in Syria and is reportedly backing the Taliban in Afghanistan, two locations where American armed forces are currently in harm's way. If it is shown that strategic decisions made by this administration have influenced by whatever relations they have with Saudis, Russians, etc., that pretty much crosses the line for treason in capital letters. Enough with downplaying the misgivings by this man. You know, there is one technical thing. I don't want to raise it, but we are still at war with North Korea, and they are an enemy under that definition.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have much more to discuss. Currently, the Dow is down almost 200 points, another rocky start to the
beginning of the week. And we're going to see our financial advisors.
I was going to say, the good news is I'll never retire.
Yeah. So we will talk about that and other stuff when we get back. And first, we'll go to news right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the final go-round here on the roundtable panel. Libby Post, Barry Lewis, Sarah Rogerson, Jim Ketterher, and Alan Chartok. We have a lot to discuss. A couple things. First of all, on Friday, we started to hear murmurs that that John Kelly, the White House chief of staff, would probably be departing. One of the things that led to the speculation on Friday was that they canceled all of the meetings, and then somebody said, oh, well, those two, meaning the president and the chief of staff, haven't been on speaking terms for a couple of days. That seemed bad. Then on Saturday, the president announced that John Kelly would be leaving by the end of the year, and now it appears that it's wrapping up a little more rapidly than that. So all eyes were on Nick Ayers, who is the chief of staff for the vice president of the United States.
And how old is he?
36. 37.
36.
Yeah, but he's
37.
Not taking the job.
36. So he then comes out and
who
says,
now has more money than God suddenly. Yeah.
So thank you very much, but he's going back to Georgia to spend more time with his family and as he says, to
make America great.
Advance the cause. Yeah. So, but he's
whenever
certainly
somebody says, I want to spend more time with the family. That's never good.
Although I have to say, given his options of taking that job, yeah, I would run back to those kids.
I'm sure his parents told him.
Donald Trump doesn't need a chief of staff because no one's going to control him. He really doesn't have. He runs his office and his life, and
by
no one's going to control him.
But there are people, you know. Look, this. So we're hitting a point that whatever happens here with Mueller and the investigation going on, that this will be a very rocky time. And so who will be minding the store is the question. And what now? So it's somewhat fascinating to see who will take that job, which I would think would be among the worst jobs in the world.
And it's also interesting.
Like Kelly couldn't handle. I'm sorry. Right. If a general who's dealt with combat and military, and if he can't control, I mean, there's no controlling the president.
Barry,
and
it's a general. It's certainly, you're right in describing it as a general, but a general with integrity.
Yes.
There's the rub.
And a Marine for 30 years.
Yeah. But that Trump came in enamored with all these generals. Yeah. Mattis, McMaster, Flynn, Kelly. Now, that doesn't seem to be sustaining itself.
We've moved on.
Right.
We're down to Mattis. They have integrity and they say no.
And
stupid.
He may be soon to go as well.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you're going to see all of these people. I mean, it's the integrity issue. And I think that you're going to see it even in some of these judicial nominations. They're going to put their own integrity above any kind of loyalty to Trump.
Well, maybe, because this is going to eventually get to the Supreme Court of the United States. They're going to say, the question is going to be, can you indict a sitting president? And the Justice Department says, no. Our obiter dictor says you cannot do that. And I'm saying, that's ridiculous. I mean, the idea that if a president takes a gun in broad daylight and shoots somebody and kills them, that they can't be indicted is ridiculous on its face. So sooner or later goes up there. Then we watch Clarence Thomas, Kavanaugh, and all the other guys to see whether or not they are practicing politics or the world's oldest profession.
Yes, you're right when it gets to that level. But what I'm talking about is these lower level court appointments, these lower level, even the new guy Barr, who is going to be nominated as attorney general. Right. Is he going to put his own political credibility and his own ethics at risk by supporting the illegalities of this presidency?
Maybe. Well, we've seen Mitch McConnell do it.
Yes, but Mitch McConnell has nothing to lose because he will be majority leader regardless.
But this guy wants to be attorney general the same way. What are you talking about?
Look at the number of Republican leaders in Congress who, threw away whatever credibility they have.
Because they wanted the courts, and they got it.
Yeah.
And by the way, he's been quoted, our new bar has been quoted again and again about all of these positions, including, you know, presidential pardons and investigations and all the rest of it. I don't think, maybe not pardons, but investigations, I think he's already sold his soul.
Well, we'll see. We'll
Attorneys
see.
General do have to...
uphold the Constitution.
Uphold the Constitution. They're beholden to the law. And so maybe we'll be asking whether a sitting attorney general can be disbarred.
Yeah, right.
So the new list with Kelly out and Ayers not wanting to take the job includes Office of Management and Budget Director Mick Mulvaney, who's also acting director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Representative Mark Meadows, the North Carolina Republican, a leader of the conservative House Freedom Caucus. Now, interestingly, Mulvaney has said he doesn't want it either. So that's a problem. And the other person whose name is coming up is Steve Mnuchin.
Also said he doesn't want it.
And also said, don't pick me.
Not it.
Not it.
And
right.
Also now the new acting attorney general.
Whitaker.
His name has also been mentioned.
You know, he might end up being
a a very interesting point.
Like a bull in a china shop.
Yeah.
And I still, you know, in the end, it sounds silly, but it could be any member of the Trump Inner Circle family. Why wouldn't someone like an Ivanka or a Jared be the person who the president would want as chief of staff, as someone who I can talk to and trust?
Can you imagine what the wives and the husbands and the children are saying? When one of these guys shows up and says, the president wants to appoint me as the chief of staff,
divorce.
They all yell, are you out of your mind? Everybody's going to jail.
Right.
You know, I think so we've been at this now for an hour and 15 minutes this morning and talking about all of this that's swirling around. Which is really all that dominates Washington, certainly all that's dominating the White House. What amount of time is left to actually govern the country? You know, that's a pretty much a full-time job, governing the country, taking care of serious issues, wondering what our adversaries might be up to in the world. I mean, it's not only ridiculous, it's really worrisome.
Well, and he doesn't care about any of that. He doesn't. He doesn't understand what it means to govern. He has no clue what his real work responsibilities are. He just wants power, and that's it. And absolute loyalty, right, from the people he appoints, and not have to return anything like that to them.
And we see his vicious words about his own children.
That's right.
Point just how far that goes right now.
Right.
Well, we'll see. Okay, so.
Well, here's something hopeful. I would love to see the attrition rate of civil servants, long-standing civil servants. I hope we still have 50% at least, a solid base of people who are making the government work every day.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, they are.
People are doing that.
Now, I do want to, tap into Professor Ketterer's great knowledge here and talk a little bit about Brexit. This will probably be one of the biggest news stories this week. The vote is tomorrow. There's a lot at stake on this.
You're thinking about the parliamentary vote, not going bringing it back to the people yet.
That's right. Well, yeah. And so we had major protests across the country, across England yesterday. Both for and against this, and so I don't know. Do we have any sense of where this is going to go?
Let me start off by saying I'm not a great expert, maybe on anything, but certainly not on British politics. But I do follow it because I'm interested in it, and I have colleagues who do know a lot about it. And
so, as part of the director of the academic director of the Bard Globalization International Affairs Program, that is included in that. I mean, that has
it
a
is.
Huge component.
We
to
do
it,
care
correct?
About the United okay. Kingdom. That's yes, right. Yeah. We don't All write right. it off. We don't write it off. I don't All want right. to just oversell myself. But
okay.
And we were chatting about this before the program started this morning. You know, Theresa May's position as a politician, a conservative politician in Britain. I mean, she came in against Brexit. It's not, I mean, a lot of this is a civil war that's going on among the Tories and who's pro, who's con, and what, you know, the devil is in the details. What is the plan really going to say? And so the agreement that, you know, she hammered out, the Chequers Agreement, as it's called, you know, talks about things that really make it seem sort of like Brexit, but no Brexit. You know, a common rule book understanding on agriculture and trade that Britain will still support standards, EU standards on the environment, on consumer protection, on all these other sorts of things, and that there will be a combined customs territory. So it all sounds sort of like the EU, but they're not really in the EU. And of course, this is driving the pro-Brexiteers absolutely crazy. And, you know, to see the protests over the past few days and the kind of violent subtext to these protests, I think at the same time that we see across the channel, we see things really spinning out of control in France. You know, I think we got used to for a long time this idea that Europe was stable. Which, of course, for most of history, that's not true. And I'm not saying, you know, we're reverting to the worst of old times, but the assumption that Europe is just by definition a stable actor in the international system, I think really is no longer the case.
So I have so many questions for you. Number one, how would you have voted on Brexit if you were a British citizen, knowing what you know now?
Well, I think a lot of British citizens who voted for it now would change their vote. Well, now that the details are coming out.
Well, if
what
they
does
do
really
have
mean?
Another election, and secondly, on the French situation, what happens there? I mean, Macron is
well. Macron already has tried to give in. He already pulled back on some of the taxes, and that doesn't seem to right. And that doesn't seem to be enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he is going to give a speech to the nation today.
We're laughing because we're watching CNN up there. It says Representative Meadows on White House Chief of Staff job: absolutely not.
Nobody wants the job.
I think there are more people that would rather be the coach of the Jets
than
they'll be Chief of Staff.
Yes, sir. Put it a moment ago. Not it. And we were just saying that Representative Meadows was
out.
So in other words, there's nobody on the list who actually wants the job yet. So
it'll be Ivanka.
Maybe they could bring in Boris Johnson from the United Kingdom.
Making a great point.
Nice bringing it back to what we were talking. Thank you.
Boris and Donald.
But I asked our esteemed professor before
gets serious.
Yes. if she's not the prime minister, hasn't become the fall guy, has taken the fall for this, that as the British citizens began to realize and saw in the details the dangers of Brexit, here's somebody who is not a Brexit person and yet is going to can possibly be ousted in a vote of no confidence for trying to maneuver all of these sides.
Right. And an impossible task, you know, I mean, and I think that's the thing here is that it's not just a question of what's the next vote in Parliament or when's the next time that the public can weigh in on this. It's that, will this issue actually be resolved and put to bed one way or another? Or will it just kind of simmer on for many years with both sides at each other, you know, cannibalizing their own from their own parties, tossing one out or another? I mean, it's been interesting to see that as May is in such trouble politically, others from her own party kind of rising up to take a more prominent role, like Rory Stewart, who is a very interesting character, was a diplomat, was in the British Army, served in Afghanistan, is close to the royal family, and also is able to kind of maybe more adroitly strike that balance that she's not a terribly great politician. But I don't think she was put in for that. I mean, she was put in to try to hedge.
Well, she's
on
great
this
enough
issue.
To have been there, Jim, for
she's,
a long time.
She's hanging in there now, yeah.
Are there parallels to what we see in this country? That the uncertainty in Trump after 2 years, that we'll see suddenly Republicans here rise up as if more political and judicial problems fall the president?
Well, I think the people who are rising up against May are the ones who support Brexit. I mean, it's a rise from the right against her.
Which we're seeing to some degree also in the conservative, we're seeing a lot of conservatives.
You know, a lot of us have our own ideas about Brexit, but I have to say, I understand the anti-Brexit issues and the pro-Brexit issues. I mean, you know, England has been its own boss for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And they don't want to give that up.
And, you know, I do think that the people who put together, wove together the EU over all these years, I mean, the what is seen as the bureaucrats in Brussels, I really think that they underestimated the lasting power of national identity.
Yeah.
And and trying to weave together what's a, you know, started off in many ways in people's minds as you know, a trade pact on steroids, and then is what was it moving at some point to the United States of Europe or not? What does that mean for things that are well beyond trade issues? And it's not just in Britain, obviously, that we're seeing the backlash against this.
No, we saw that with the failed constitution for the early in EU politics, right? Because there was disagreement over essentially identity politics and bills of rights, essentially, right? So who gets what when? And maybe that's the real birth of modern nationalism. That's the failed EU constitution.
I also think the open borders makes people afraid. I mean, we were in Paris for the attacks. It was scary. And we didn't, you know, but these folks could come and go. There was no one at the borders. The only time we saw any armed guard was at the last toll booth when we were leaving France to go to Luxembourg, you know, and so I think that
it's less about the borders though, and more about the politicians who stoke those flames of fear, who use those.
But they use it. They use it to their advantage
every time.
So, in our 2 minutes left, one of the stories we have on here too is. Oh, do you want to do that? Okay.
Well, Alan wants to do that.
I do.
Okay.
There's an incredible story in the New York Daily News today.
It is the Daily News.
Read it in the Daily News. It must be so. Yeah, go ahead.
So a popular Jewish comic from Brooklyn was booted from two different eateries because the local kosher police threatened to yank her religious stamp of approval on the food if a lesbian performed there. This happens to 36-year-old Leah Forster, whose stand-up shtick features the insular Orthodox world that she grew up in, had planned to hold a New Year's Eve bash in her Brooklyn neighborhood, but both owners canceled once the kosher nosha put on the squeeze.
It's called the VOD.
Okay.
And they made it very clear that she would not talk about her lesbianism in her stand-up.
You know, these guys, they take this to such a ridiculous end. Leviticus 18:22 says, man shall not lie with man as he would with a woman. Okay, I get it. But it also, Leviticus also says, you can stone your parents, sell your daughter into slavery, you know, all of that other kind of ridiculous stuff.
All of those other Leviticus hits.
Right. The fact of the matter is, lesbians were not even on anyone's radar when all of that, because they couldn't imagine.
Or gaydar.
Right. They couldn't imagine what lesbians would do. What would two women do? Because there wasn't the male member involved. So lesbians aren't even part of this. And now all they're doing is using this to shut people up, to shut this woman up. And the fact of the matter is, it's illegal in New York City to do this.
Sure.
It's going to the Human Rights Commission. She's an independent contractor. She's covered because it's discrimination based on sexual orientation. And the VOD needs to just pay attention to food and not get into social
issues. Remind us who the VOD is again.
Huh?
Remind us who
the VOD is.
The kosher
nosher. The VOD is the entities in each community that go in and say, you're kosher.
And you see the packets on the walls or in the
We have
on
the
windows.
VOD here that goes in and you know, oversees some of the kosher kitchens in the temples. We have they oversee the kosher kitchens in Dutch Quad at SUNY Albany. And there are VODs all over the country because we need to have, you know.
Who appoints the VODs?
Well, that's another question.
And there are different VODs, right, with different values?
Yes, there are different VODs with different values and different levels of kosherness.
Yeah. But, of course, now this woman has now gotten more publicity than she could have ever gotten in her life,
true.
So she will do well.
Yeah.
But the other part was—
I don't know. If you can't play Brooklyn, though, what the hell?
She'll play somewhere else.
But also, the places that were booking her knew her shtick. It's sort of like, you know, when you sign up for someone, you know what they're going to get.
All right. We're late. My apologies.
Oh, no.
Libby, Barry, Sarah, Jim, Alan, thank you. We'll be back after this.